Shalom and welcome to the Marshall Portnoy Show. Hello, everyone. This is Marshall Portnoy wishing you happy and healthy 2019. Today, we pay tribute to our other language, not Hebrew, not English, not Ladino. Today, we recall the language that held our people together for 1,000 years and still holds us together. Spoken around the world, it expresses the everyday life we lead in the marketplace, at home with our families, in business, and in fact, in all areas of life. It's the language in which we laugh and cry and argue and say, I love you, as well as Sollst haben ein Kreuz geschäft und was nur Menschen sollen beten bei dir, sollst du nicht haben. Und was du sollst ja haben, soll keiner nicht dürfen. You should have a large store, and whatever people ask for, you shouldn't have. And what you do have, nobody should ever want. Or, soll sitzen beim Tisch mit Fremden sein ganz Leben und keiner soll nicht gucken auf ihn. He should all his life sit at a table with strangers, and nobody should ever look at him. Or, all his teeth shall fall out except one to make him suffer eternally. Avada, red ich wegen Yiddish. In Yiddish haben wir gelacht und geweint. Wir haben geredet wegen Liebe, wegen Kinder, Mames, Tates, Philosophie und Borscht. Wir haben geschrieben Poesie und gescholten. Of course. I can be speaking only of Yiddish. What a treat we have later in the show. Eleanor Risa, star of the Yiddish stage. And then lots of Yiddish lore and language on the show today. In a moment, a great new song by Naomi Miller, which will certainly get us right in the mood for Eleanor Risa. But first, I just want to say that I am so grateful to you, my listeners, for doing just that, for listening. And I want you to listen carefully to this, because it's about two people in your lives whom you love the most, and that's, of course, your parents. They gave to us. Now it's our turn to give back. We want to provide them the finest and most dignified lifestyle we can. That means good food, good fun, and other people around who care about them. If you need to help a parent achieve a positive, nurturing new direction in life, call Symphony Square at 484-436-2603. and have a look at Symphony Square. Tell them Marshall sent you, and if you decide to take this important new direction in the life of your parents, you will receive special consideration for the first 3 months of Mom or Dad's new and better life. Symphony Square, assisted living, meaningful life. 484-436-2603. All right, I promised you this wonderful song by Naomi Miller. She wrote it, she sings it. Here she is, with Streets Paved with Gold.
My father said the only place that we could strike it rich after the war was, where do you think? I'm Solomon the plumber from Lodz. Hello, I'm Solomon the plumber from Lodz. And I offer you my talents to judge. So here I am in America. I'm trying to make a dollar. I'm looking for the streets paved with gold. This ain't exactly what I've been told. The rent is high, the clothes are strange, the food you eat, you need to change. I'm looking for the streets paved with gold. Somewhere near Delancey, I'm told. So here we are, Delancey Street. There ain't no gold, just bare concrete. I'm Solomon the plumber from Lodz. An engineer and consultant of sludge. So here I am in America, still trying to make a dollar. Direct me to the streets paved with gold. Where are the streets paved with gold? Mister, please direct me. Hey, lady, please connect me. You say that it's not in NYC. Must have erred in geography. So pack your bags and come with me. My intuition's telling me the gold is in New Jersey, you see. Thank you. Thank you.
When I think of Yiddish, I naturally think of the Yiddish theater, which is having such a heartwarming revival in New York and other cities around the globe.
And when I think of Yiddish theater, one name comes to mind. Well, actually, two names. One is Molly Picon, and the other is Eleanor Risa, with whom we shall visit in just a little bit. But how about we put both these great stars together as we listen to Eleanor sing the great hits of Molly Picon.
Menschen, kleine Kinder laufen noch auf Weise, wenn der Wenn man singt, noch schreit, noch am Kopf. Oh, hey, Rick, alle dem Rebens. Ich bin geruten in mein Bobbezeitl. Große Menschen, kleine Kinder laufen noch auf Weise, wenn der Wenn man singt, noch schreit, noch am Kopf. Gewollt, oi wuss, wollt ich denn nicht gewollt? Wollt gewollt, 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 oi wuss, wollt ich denn nicht gewollt? Ich wollt, gewollt, ein Schweckel sein, ein reingeklappten Tier. Papias, mein Geliebte, soll sich aufhängen auf mir. Ich wollt gewollt a Fläschel sein, abgefüllt mit Bier. A Bier als mein Geliebte soll verschickern sich mit mir. A wie weit in a Feind wollt mir als der Mut sein. Ich wollt gewollt und gewollt, gewollt und gewollt. Oi, wo's wollt ich denn nicht gewollt? Ich wollt gewollt und gewollt, gewollt und gewollt. Oi, wo's wollt ich denn nicht gewollt? Ich wollt gewollt a Fliegel sein, wo steht dort auf die Wand? Abi, als mein Geliebte so mich hatten mit der Hand. Ich wollt gewollt a Mesuse sein, wo's hängt dort auf die Tier. Abi, als mein Geliebte so verschmiertschgen sich mit mir. Abi, weit in a Feind wollt mir als der Mut sein. Ich wollt gewollt und gewollt und gewollt und gewollt. Oh, ihr wusst, wollt ich denn nicht gewollt? Ich wollt gewollt und gewollt, gewollt und gewollt. Oh, ihr wusst, wollt ich denn nicht gewollt? Ich wollt gewollt und gewollt, gewollt und gewollt. Oh, ihr wusst, wollt ich denn nicht gewollt? Ich wollt gewollt und gewollt und gewollt und gewollt. Oh, ihr wusst, wollt ich denn nicht gewollt?
She's equally comfortable in a cabaret setting, the Broadway stage, or the Yiddish theater. Here's Eleanor very much at home, accompanied by Frank London and the Klezmer Brass All-Stars at the Museum of Jewish Heritage.
So when I lived in Brooklyn, we thought there were two kinds of Jews, the happy Jews and the sad Jews. And then I found out that the happy Jews were the Italians. It's amazing that they managed to squeeze all this vodka into this bottle. So, you know, you could be happy, but don't be too happy. That was pretty much the running, you know, that was life as we knew it in East New York. And this song that we're going to do is kind of just like that. It's called Freilich Sein, which means be happy, but don't be too happy. So, for my Swedish-speaking friends, I did this at home and it worked really well. So, for my Swedish-speaking friends, of which there are more here than you imagine, I'm going to do a quick translation. So, the words are, I'm going to sing you a song that's a machaya. A machaya. A machaya for my friends who only speak Urdu. A machaya is the greatest pleasure you could have. There's not a great, if you could just think of your greatest fantasy, don't share it with me, but if you could think of your greatest fantasy, that would be what a machaya is, and then maybe pour chicken fat on it and just make it even better. But that's a machaya. So I'm going to sing you a song that's a machaya. The melody is old, the words are new. My grandma and grandpa sang it, and also my father sang it on Shabbos after he ate noodle pudding. I guess that's the bad part of the song, the unhappy part. Then they go on to say, this is a true story. I'm going to tell you a true little story. My neighbor told me that last night his best friend Yukel ran away with his wife. This morning Yukel brought her back.
The melody is out and all the campus and the night.
This is Marshall Portnoy at WWDBAM in Philadelphia, 860 on the dial, or anywhere in the world on WWDBAM.com. I have such a treat. The pride of the Yiddish theater, not just the Yiddish theater, American theater too, as we'll explore with my guest, Eleanor Risa. Eleanor, for over 30 years, has been certainly one of the premier performers, inspirers, instigators, anything that has to do with Yiddish theater. That's where her passion is. That's where her life is. That's where her art is. As a singer, as an actress, as a director, as a writer, and I'm going to add as a scholar and translator of the Yiddish theater, there's just nothing that she doesn't do. She's coming off a very impressive sellout, I think, this past November 6th of The Tenth Man by Patty Chayefsky, but you didn't do it in English. You did it in Yiddish. Amazing. It's always been a wonder to me why nobody's thought of doing it in Yiddish before, but
because
maybe
it's really hard to do.
Is that it?
Yeah, some people might have thought about it, but then they thought twice and thought, whoa, this is harder than it appears. So, hello, Marshall. Well, you said such nice things about me. My mother would never have said all those nice things, so thank you.
You know, when I reflected on the fact that no one had translated The Tenth Man by Patty Chayefsky before, I thought to myself, well, that's why God put Eleanor Risa in this world. You really have done some remarkable, remarkable things. And the variety, the breadth and the width and the depth, not only Yiddish, but English and just about every theatrical style that you can imagine you have been part of. You mentioned your mother, so that leads me to, an obvious segue, and that is, I'll tell you, some time ago I watched you being interviewed, an individual from the Yiddish Book Center.
Yes, Krista.
When she asked you the question, what did you learn from your family? You didn't answer. You broke down. You really began to cry. Mm. But it wasn't cry like tears of sadness or this is some terrible thing. It was absolutely tears of joy and tears of gratitude and tears of love.
You know, it's hard to these days speak about my family, who are mostly not on this earth anymore, without weeping about them, even though they've been gone for a long time. But they've missed a lot of my life, and a lot of the part that they missed was really about them, actually. And most of the work that I do in whatever language and whatever medium is with them in my heart consciousness. You know, I'm moved by them. I'm moved by what they went through. They were Holocaust survivors, which I would like to say they were fighters who fought to stay alive, and consequently that means they fought for me. Mm-hmm. So my yich is my legacy. The legacy they left me is the legacy of strong people who loved life so much that they were not about to let anyone take it away from them.
By the way, I've got regards for you from a number of people.
Good.
And first of all, Rita Ratzen.
Yes.
Rita Ratzen is on our show because we do a Yiddish segment just about every week. And she is, I want to say, you're a number one Philly.
Yay, yeah. Yay, the fan club. Yeah. Rita, begin it. Get that list together.
And we say PHAN, because Philly fan.
Philly fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I have regards also from Naomi Miller. I don't know if you remember
Naomi.
Sure,
I do remember Naomi. The singer. She's a singer.
She's a fabulous singer.
Yeah, in Jersey.
In Jersey,
yes,
and she is, you know what? She is as good now. We just performed last Monday.
Mm-hmm.
She's marvelous.
I'm sure she is. Whenever I've heard her, she's been terrific.
And just so committed and so passionate. And that's part of being Yiddishist, right?
Yeah, Yiddish is growing, and Yiddish is more alive than it's been in decades.
Yiddish? Who knew?
Yeah.
It's
terrific. There's a younger generation that's really grabbing it, and it's wonderful.
You loved to listen to your family tell stories about the family, tell stories about others, and so forth. And when did the musical part kind of combine with that to make this incredible Eleanor Risa character on the stage?
Well, thank you. It's been years in the making. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was an actress in English, and I wasn't a singer. I wasn't singing, and eventually I stopped smoking cigarettes. And when I stopped smoking cigarettes, I started to entertain the idea of singing, mm-hmm. started getting some work, but really didn't think of myself as a singer. My mother was extremely critical of my voice and thought I was not a singer, and consequently, I told a lot of jokes. I thought that a way to get over as a singer would be to make them laugh, and then it didn't really matter. It hasn't been until the last 10 years or so that I understand that I can sing.
Come on.
Well, I'm just saying. That's just, you know, I didn't really understand.
Have most of the people in the theater whom you have met had a sort of back story that is a little bit complicated?
Or doesn't everybody have a backstory that's complicated? It's just a question of how they... I mean, I have relatives, for example, who are also children of survivors, not necessarily divorced people or anything like that, but we're so different. I mean, I think everyone has a backstory. Some people like to keep the backstory in the back. Artists live with the backstory in the front.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone's got a backstory, but not everybody is fortunate enough to make fodder out of it, or hay, whichever.
Tell me about that evening in Philadelphia when Mary Surianni became ill, because I think that's an important in terms of your trajectory.
It was so long ago.
Well, but
Marshall,
but it's in Philadelphia.
Yes,
so we
it
want
was.
To know about
it was
that.
In Philadelphia. It was the first Yiddish theater I'd ever done. I was playing a very small part in the chorus. She got ill the day before we were to leave. The day we were to leave for Philadelphia, it was Moshe Septi of blessed memory was the producer, and Mary was ill, and they called to cancel the tour. It was the beginning of a tour around the country, and I called the producer back after he said, "We're not going," and I said, "I think I could do it." Mm-hmm. And basically, the cast worked with me in the van heading to Philly, and I went on that night. It was horrifying and great fun, because when you're the star or the lead, every line, every laugh line, every entrance, every exit is for you. So on a certain level, it was easier to do than playing a small part in the chorus. So it changed things a little bit for me. It kind of put me on the map.
It's like that guy in the kettle drum in the symphony who has to wait 22
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, that's what, bang.
108, 109,
yeah.
100, boom.
No, this was you play the whole time.
Yeah.
Bang, bang, bang.
Well, you're definitely the violinist in that. What was the name of the play?
That was called Rebecca the Rabbi's
Daughter. Oh, yeah, of course,
daughter.
Yeah.
Rivka
yeah.
Ledem Rebs. And that was kind of that. I mean, that job lasted a while, and then Mary came back, and fortunately for me, I got a job. I auditioned for a show in English, a Michael Weller play, and fortunately I got it, because it was very difficult for me to go back into the chorus.
Was there ambivalence about being in the American theater versus the Yiddish American theater? Did you know at that point
at that time, Yiddish theater to me was an embarrassment. Mm-hmm. And it was a secret that...
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Because once you were typed as that, then people forgot that you spoke English. Mm-hmm. So the more the world knows in my business, the worse it is. So the more they know about me or one or an actor, it's better that they don't know my age, they don't know my ethnic origin, because otherwise you're a Jewish or you're a 30 or you're 40 and you can't play 20. And so...
But it's too late now. You're out.
I am out. I am. But I'm out because I ran from it, mm-hmm. but all the people were running in my direction. I was running away, and they were running toward me.
You didn't know that.
I didn't know. And at a certain point, I had to stop running and accept the inevitable, which I'm grateful to have done.
The inevitable is pretty good.
It worked out okay, but how can you know?
What was your proudest moment?
My proudest moment, it happens, you know, they come and they go. I mean, sometimes when I make a good omelet, I'm happy about it.
And I left the question open purposely because I didn't know if you were going to say something related to the theater or something related to your own life.
I've had a really, you know, I mean, I've been around now for a while, as we know, and it turned out my life, my work turned out differently than I expected. Although, you know, when I was younger, if you would ask me what success meant, what I used to say was that I would have a coffee table full of scripts and projects. Mm-hmm. And that to me meant that I was successful. And that's what I have.
That's what you have right now. Yeah.
That's what I have. So I view the reason I've been stoking, you know, shoveling coal into the fire for a long time, and now the engine is moving.
And then on the other side of the coin, anything that you profoundly regret?
Yes, ish. I came up the hard way without really help or knowledge. I didn't go to Yale or Juilliard. My parents were not Desi Arnaz or Lucille Ball. I didn't have dough. But so consequently, I scratched my way to the middle. I was fearful, and sometimes out of fear, I was harsh or rude or short or defensive, which came off kind of aggressive. And it was a different time for women also to be, who were kind of, then it was sort of pushy, but I was pushy. And I still am pushy, but in a much more, in a kinder and relaxed way. So I'm sorry. There are people that I have apologized to for whatever tongue lashing I might have given, you know, so I'm sorry about that.
Did that behavior...
It didn't help me.
I'm saying, was there any... Did it harm you in any way?
You know, you do... I kind of think mm-hmm. that you... One does work better with honey than with a stick mm-hmm. or a carrot. My own insecurity and my own fear mm-hmm. and my own youth sometimes... You know, I was honest to fault.
And I don't think that's anything over which you had control, because you're your mother's daughter, you're your grandmother's granddaughter, and society then wasn't what it is now. We've learned to accept women in another light. But you were kind of born a woman's movement. You were there.
I mean, I came from women who struggled on their own and also scratched their way to air, to a breath. I scratched my way a little higher than that because I didn't have to scratch for air.
Society now is much more accepting of that kind of...
I wouldn't even, you know, I don't know that they're more so much more accepting, but it's less uncommon. You know, it's less uncommon to be a woman in a locker room or a woman running a company or a woman in government or a woman behind a camera. You know, it's still uncommon, but it's certainly less uncommon.
But more acceptance of a lesbian, of a transsexual.
Gesindheit.
Yeah.
Ich misch sich nicht daran, you know, free to be you and me.
Right. And that's good.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, you're getting in. We're getting into your activism thing.
As you like. As you like. It's been, you know, everything's connected.
What's a song that you love to sing? You could just sing it over and over and over. Or a song that you love to hear.
There are so many. I mean, it's like, you know, what topic or what, you know, I mean, there are so many tunes. I keep learning new tunes, not fast enough, but there are so many great tunes. I was just over at Evo talking to Lawrence Glamberg, mm-hmm. who's the music archivist there. It is an enormous resource of Yiddish documents, music, interviews. I mean, enormous, millions of pages of documents about Jewry and culture.
What were you doing at Evo?
On April 15th, mm-hmm. there's a program at Carnegie Hall called From Shtetl to Stage mm-hmm. That I'm directing and co-creating with Seth Rugavoy. Mm-hmm. We're putting it together, and Lawrence Glamberg, being the scholar that he is, I thought it would be wise of me to just pick his brain a little bit to see, you know, it's an enormous undertaking. Basically, it's going to be just 20 songs, and how do you crack open the enormous world of Yiddish music and art with 20 tunes, and what have you left out? And if you're going to leave out, do you know what you're leaving out? Do you know what you're including? So, I mean, I know what I know, which is limited. And so I was at Evo visiting with Lauren, hoping to expand my bandwidth just a little bit.
What are some of the songs that we'll hear this April?
Well, you know, it's a surprise.
Okay, we'll just have to wait.
It's a surprise, but I would say that don't wait to buy your tickets okay. because I hear that it's almost sold out.
Well, you have a habit of selling out.
Life is good. Very fortunate.
Tell me about some of the things that you've written.
I've mostly written plays. I'm currently working on a memoir about a trip that I made to Germany last year that I'm pretty excited about. That's is the culmination of my life's work. We'll see what happens with it, but...
Well, you're far from culmination, my dear.
Well, up until now, maybe I'm using the word wrong, but listen, you know, I don't know what you think about life, Marshall, but I understand that it is, you know, I know people who talk about waiting, you know, what they're going to do when they're 80, and I just think about, you know, mostly next year.
Do it now.
And
right.
you know, I don't have any expectation. Everybody I know is dead. You know, my family is mostly dead, and they die too young, and they die too soon. Yeah. And so I don't expect, you know, what is that called when insurance people tell you?
Actuary?
An actuary. The actuary table. Yeah. And I just think, well, really? You know, yeah. So
the mortality rate's still 100%, isn't it?
Yeah. So
it's that happy but fearful.
Grateful.
Yeah.
It's been a terrific life.
That's
it's
wonderful.
Been a terrific life.
So good.
Yeah. I mean, and now it's sort of different. It's different. I mean, it's reached a different level that even I accept what I've done, and I look on it as good work over the years.
That's great. To be able to look back and feel like.
Well, it's taken a really long time, but I think you know, I know stuff now. I've been working and compiling data about what I think what I think is good, what I...
You're like the State Farm people. You know a thing or two because you've seen a thing or two.
I guess so. I guess so. I didn't know that was their... Yeah. Yeah, so it's good. You know, I've been singing with Frank London a lot.
Yeah.
And that's been a bit of a game changer.
So cool. Yeah.
It's so cool.
It is.
It's totally cool. And it's really different from, you know, my work with other people because he's, you know, he gives relaxation. You know, he makes the word relaxation seem uptight. So we're very loose. He's very loose, and the musicians are all really good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's elevated my game a lot, and made me freer. And so that's been fun. It's been fun.
If you're just at home one evening and you want to ignore your coffee table and all of those things on it that you know you have to get to, and you just want to relax and listen to someone sing or play an instrument, who are the one or two people that you would just want to... We wouldn't say put on the record player anymore, but you know what I mean.
Neil Young,
mm-hmm,
and Bob Dylan.
Oh, my.
With some Miles Davis.
Would never have guessed that.
And, you know, when, you know, some Joni Mitchell. I mean, if left to my own devices, if it's just time to veg out, almost in that order.
I was just listening to Crazy Horse yesterday.
Yeah, that's what I do for,
When you sit down to write, what's going through your mind and what have you come up with?
Ultimately, it's all about me, which it is tiresome even to me. But the plays, I write plays about family, I guess.
Are there any other projects that we should know about coming up for Eleanor Risa in 2019?
2019, it's got the Kurt Weill in Dessau, Germany, and April 15th is Carnegie Hall. July of 2019 is Yitzhak up the Yiddish Book Center in Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
And the Folkspina, we just did this reading of Tenth Man, there's no contract, but there's talk about the spring of 2020 to mount the Tenth Man in Yiddish. So
staged, right.
Staged with a run, yes, fully staged. So there's a producer who's working to this play that I wrote called Thicker Than Water. He's trying to pitch that around right now. But I'm je suis contente, as we say in Yiddish.
That's right.
Alles geht, chabasach, I have a lot. And ich bin glücklich, I'm fortunate. And I'm enjoying.
Très bien. And we are fortunate to have had with us today Eleanor Risa, and I have a feeling that she's going to be back. Eleanor, what a privilege to have you on the air
today. Thank you so much, Marshall. It's been my pleasure.
Shloime HaMelech zu sein Shulame Gesingen a Liebes Schir In Pint wie Shloime dann geliebte meine Bring ich mein Lied jetzt zu dir Ich sing vor dir mein Schir Hashir Mein Liebe
We're back with Rita Ratzin. You can reach her, by the way, at rjratzin@yahoo.com if you'd like to begin your Yiddish or improve the Yiddish that you already have. Or if you want to teach Rita, you can reach her.
I would love to learn.
I don't know there's much that you have to learn. But, you know, last week we really talked a lot about Hanukkah, and it was so much fun. I thought today we'd talk about la table, the table, the set table. Tell us about the table, the plates, the flatware, and all of that. How do we say all that in Yiddish?
And das alles. Das alles is all of this. So the table, the word for table is der Tisch. The Tisch is very important in our culture. Everything happens at the Tisch. You know, before a chasana, you have a tish, means the rabbi and the bride and groom are at the tish, and the important blessings happen there. You go to the table for dinner, you go to the tish, and I know in my family and everyone I've ever spoken to, previous generations, nobody begins to eat until der Tate is at beim Tisch. And if the Tate is at the Tisch and the mama is still cooking and preparing, we're waiting until the mama is at
absolutely,
the Tisch. Everybody has to sit together before you start eating.
And I just said absolutely, 100%. How would you say that in Yiddish?
In ganzen der Emes.
That's beautiful.
The whole truth. So that's the Tisch. Very important. Mir gehen zum Tisch. Mean that's a statement that you always hear, mir gehen zum Tisch, we are going to the table, meaning that's a very important part of the day. Everyone knows where they have to be, and we're going to go eat together. That's all that needs to be said, mir gehen zum Tisch. So when we're at the Tisch, we're having dinner, mir essen Mittag, and we want to know what silverware we have, right? That's our subject of the silverware.
Yeah.
We have the guppel, which is a fork. We have the knife on the other side is der Messer. And we have a spoon is a leffel. But if it's a leffel, that connotates that it's large, meaning it's a soup spoon. And we don't have to say soup spoon. We say der leffel. So we know we're having soup tonight. If you want to say soup, the word is zup. Zup leffel. When you have the smaller, what we call dessert spoon.
Well, we say teaspoon.
You say teaspoon. Mm-hmm. In Yiddish, we say das lefala.
Ah, okay.
Lefala is the little spoon.
So I take it from listening to that beautiful recounting of the flatware that goes on the table that in Europe, as in America, the fork, the...
Der Guppel.
The Guppel goes on the left. The knife goes immediately to the right of the plate, which you'll teach me in a moment, and then to the right of that, the leffel or the leffele.
Yes.
Or if you're using both, first the leffel, then the leffele.
Als dem Kultur sind sie sehr dieselbe.
Which means?
Culturally, as a culture, they are very much the same.
Because we get so much of our etiquette and manners from Europe. All right, well, the all-important plate we don't know because we're not going to eat our food directly from the Tisch. We better put it on a plate, avada.
You would be in the desert if you were doing that. So the plate, first is the dinner plate. That's der Teller.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to say anything else about der Teller means it's a large plate. We have a smaller plate with that, meaning we call it a salad plate, but it's a smaller plate. Mm-hmm. So we'd say a Teller.
I knew you were going to say that. Teller, that makes sense.
Okay. Teller. And we have a gloss. We have a glass there.
Why don't you say Teller? It's
Teller. It's like because the R is in your throat,
well, but
therefore it sounds like you're not saying it.
But
in
leffel,
leffel
becomes
is with an F.
Yeah, but the little spoon is a
leffela.
But why don't you say tellera?
It doesn't follow. It has its own way of expressing it.
Is it because it's masculine, feminine, or
no? It's diminutive.
It's just the way it is. In other words, diminutive is not always
It's not always the same.
Oh.
Lefala is a little plate. Telerl has its own way of expressing that it's small.
Because like natal, natala.
there are several ways of saying diminutive in Yiddish and several ways of saying plural. Not only, like in English, if you put an S on the end, it's plural. Mm-hmm. In Yiddish, there are four or five ways of expressing diminutive, and you just have to understand the language.
Who knew?
Complicated,
yeah.
Right?
It's a lot to take in.
But
how do you say that?
It's when you're fluent. You never think about it. You just know it.
How do you say in Yiddish, who knew?
Verot ist gewiss.
Oh, I love it. Do it again.
Verot gewiss. I would say verot dus gewiss. Who knew this?
Verot dus
gewiss.
Gewiss. It's beautiful. Anyway, you were getting to the smaller plate.
Tellerl. Did you hear that R in my throat?
Do it again.
Tellerl.
So, for example, if you're at the Tisch and you've got a beautiful big bowl of coleslaw, and
I love coleslaw.
I love coleslaw. Do you know what the secret ingredient? Well, there's no secret anymore. If I tell, I'm not going to tell it. What's the secret ingredient in your coleslaw?
First of all, we have to say coleslaw is cabbage.
Cabbage.
And the word cabbage is kreut.
Well, how do you tell the difference between kreut and coleslaw?
Gehackte kreut? Chopped coleslaw?
No, but I mean, cabbage to me is one thing and coleslaw is another.
I am stumped because to me, my mother only said she's chopping some cabbage and mixing it up. And we didn't have the word coleslaw in Yiddish. There was no word coleslaw.
Okay, said, you use cabbage.
Kreut, just kreut. The word cabbage.
All right, so anyway, we got this beautiful bowl of how do you say bowl again? Large bowl or größen?
A teppel kreut.
A teppel is a large bowl.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no way to take the kreut and put it on your plate.
Well,
so you need a serving spoon.
Man darf a größen Löffel.
A größen
Löffel. Oder a größen Guppel. Oder means or. A Guppel mit a Löffel.
Food.
Food, Essen.
No, I mean food. That's the word for food?
Yes.
Essen? I thought Essen means eat.
Essenwarg means food. Essenwarg, things to eat.
If you were to say to your wife or your mother, what food will we have tonight? It's an awkward phrase even in English. But we'd say, what are we having tonight? But
that's all we'd say. Was essen mir rein? Was hast du gekocht heim?
Oh, how about this?
What did you cook today?
You're in a restaurant. And of course, you're looking around to see what everybody...
Yes, what looks good.
What looks good.
What are they eating? What did you serve over there?
So how would you say to the waiter or the waitress, what food is that?
I don't think I'd ever say
that.
Yeah,
I know, but I want to get the word food in. How do you...
Essen.
That's a noun.
Or Essenwarg, like I started at the beginning. Yeah. Essenwarg, that
Varg
ending...
Varg is what?
Stuff.
Oh,
what kind of
eating
food
stuff?
Is it? Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Is there a word for food?
Essen.
Essen. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm looking for something that's right in front of me. How do you say in Yiddish? I'm looking for something that's right in front of me.
Ich such etwas, was ist da in mein Punem.
Right in my face.
Da in meine Augen. Or here in my eyes. Da in meine Augen. When you say da in meine Augen, here in my eyes, is the same connotation as here in my face.
There's nothing like Yiddish, is there?
Is there? I love it.
And you can improve your Yiddish or learn Yiddish or become a Yiddish maven by contacting Rita Ratzen at rjratzen@yahoo.com. Rita, a dunk.
It's a joy. Thank you.
This is Marshall Portnoy at WWDB AM 860 here in Greater Philadelphia. And my life would be a lot greater if I had something sweet to eat. Chef Jane, you're the perfect person to make a suggestion.
Yes, and since we're doing a Yiddish show, I'd like to do a recipe with a Yiddish name, and that's mandelbrot, or almond bread. And these are the twice-baked cookies that we see in so many other cultures besides Jewish cuisine. Most commonly in the Italian cuisine, they're called biscotti.
Oh.
Those crunchy, delicious cookies that we like to dip into tea or coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a nice snack. They're not very fattening, and they're very satisfying.
That's just what I wanted.
So as I said, these are twice-baked cookies. And in my recipe, you can use many different flavorings. In this recipe, I'm using almonds, cinnamon, and raisins to flavor the cookies. And that harkens back to another Yiddish reference, and that would be the song Rosenkiss mit Mandeln. So these are very traditional, but you can use other flavorings. You can do hazelnut. The Italians like to flavor these cookies with anise seed to give sort of a licorice flavor. Mm-hmm. You could put in chocolate chips. You could put in orange peel and lemon peel. So there are many flavorings. These are more traditional with almond, cinnamon, and raisins. So you're going to make a cookie dough with your, it's a kind of a heavy, thick dough. So I like to use an electric mixer. And then you fold in the raisins and the almonds by hand, and you're left with your ball of dough. I separate that into four logs. And then I flatten the logs, place them on a cookie sheet. Obviously, I always place my cookies on a piece of parchment or a silicone pad so that they don't stick. So you have these four sort of loaves. They're baked at 350 degrees for about 15 minutes. And then you remove from the oven. You take each loaf and place it on a cutting board and cut your cookies, your individual cookies, diagonally to form these little mandelbrot, or what we know as biscotti, that we see in a lot of coffee shops. But it's a twice-baked cookie, so you have to bake them again. So you're going to take the separated cookies, lay each one on its side, place them back in the oven, and rebake them again for about 10 minutes, and then remove from the oven. And so what you end up with is a crunchy, delicious raisin and almond mandelbrot. Perfect for snacking, dipping in coffee or tea, and very much in tune with our theme today of Yiddish.
Is this something that freezes well? Can you put it in the freezer and take it out, say, around Purim or Tu B'Shvat or something?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to always cool down the cookies completely to room temperature, wrap them tightly with plastic wrap, or a plastic bag, and you can probably keep in the freezer for 1 to 2 months.
Do you have like a favorite variety?
I tend to like the nut variety, so I like hazelnut, and you could use an amaretto to flavor as well. But my favorite would be the almond or the hazelnut.
And dear listeners, you will find that recipe on page 48 with a beautiful illustration, a photograph of the mandelbrot in a Jewish calendar of festive foods. Wonderful segment with you, Chef Jane.
Try the recipe, and I hope you enjoy it.
This is Marshall Portnoy. I've had the privilege and responsibility of visiting seniors in dozens of assisted living facilities. Do you know how I feel when I walk into so many of them? Well, I don't feel good. I'm not sure this is what I would want for my parent. Well, half a dozen years ago, I had a new privilege and responsibility, that of finding a place for our mom. I walked into Symphony Square, and I thought, wow. This is gorgeous. Bright, sunny, an open, intimate space with genuinely nice people. Well, let's be honest, it's a transition. But I know we made a great choice. Symphony Square, assisted living, meaningful life. Call them at 484-436-2603. It will be the most meaningful phone call you'll make this new year. Thanks for listening. Yeah, it's difficult to over-exaggerate the effectiveness and the sheer attractiveness of Symphony Square. The number again, 484-426-2603. Such nice people, too. Check it out. And thanks for checking us out this morning. Always great to talk to Eleanor Risa. Thanks also to Yiddishist Rita Ratzin and to Chef Jane. Gonna try a little of that mandelbrot with a glass of latte. Dear listeners, I'll be teaching a course at the Barnes Foundation on Monday evenings beginning January 28th entitled Jewish Art and Artists at the Barnes Foundation. I'm so excited about this and would love for you to join me. Just call the Barnes at 215-278-7000 or barnesfoundation.org/ classes. Next week on the show, we're going to bring several elements together. Martin Luther King's birthday will soon be here. And my co-WWDB broadcaster, Denise Clay, joins me for a discussion on the meaning of that important day. I'm going to tie that in with a dialogue on gun violence with Joe Zahm, founder of The Core. Of course, we can't very well separate that from a consideration of discrimination, racism, and defamation. Who better to do that than representatives of the Anti-Defamation League, familiarly known as ADL. So next week, I'll be talking to Senior Associate Regional Director Robin Burstein and Alan Gubernick, Chairman of the Board of the ADL. Speaking of songs, our Valentine's Day broadcast on February 12th is going to include my favorite love songs performed by my favorite singers. But I'd love, that's the word for Valentine's Day, I'd love to include some of yours as well. So send me those songs, the dedicatee, and you're one click away from making it happen at MarshallPortnoyShow@gmail.com. For now, this has been Marshall Portnoy. From all of us at WWDBAM 860 in Greater Philadelphia, Shalom Uvracha, peace and blessings. Shabbat.